Hello, and welcome back to the Iowa Type Theory Commute. I'm Aaron Stump, and we are talking about subtyping and functional programming right now. And I have a paper I'd like to share, talk about a little bit, which is by John Mitchell. He's a professor at Stanford. I went to grad school there, and I had him in class, and he's actually on my committee. So this paper is called Type Inference with Simple Subtypes. And this paper, Mitchell is giving actually two type inference algorithms which do the following thing. You drop in, well, I'll take the first one. They both work pretty much the same way. You drop in an untyped lambda calculus term. So you just drop in a term of the pure untyped lambda calculus. Doesn't have, you know, as nothing. It's just absolutely just variables, applications, and lambdas. That's it. There's no numbers. Sometimes you read, you know, people talking about, oh, you know, we're doing this in lambda calculus, but they've added a bunch of constants, like arithmetic operations and stuff. No, this is pure lambda calculus. All you can write is variables, applications, and lambdas. Okay, so you drop in a term like this, and out of the type inference algorithm pops. Let's just talk, as I said, there are two of them. But the first one, out from this algorithm pops a type. Well, that's good. It's type inference. It's supposed to take a term and give you a type for that term. But it does more than that. It spits out a type that your term has, and it spits out a typing context. Let's say, oh, any free variables that are in your term would need to have these types for this term to have the type it's told you. And finally, it also spits out a set of constraints, subtyping constraints, on the type variables that it's used to give you the type for the term and to give you the types for any free variables. Okay? So once again, you start with the term of untyped lambda calculus. You drop it into this algorithm, and it's guaranteed. It's a terminating algorithm. It has no failure cases. It's guaranteed to spit it back for you, a type, a typing context for your free variables, and subtyping constraints on the type variables that it had to mention in these types it was telling you. But you're telling it a term. The term has no types and expressions in it at all. This is a completely unannotated term of pure untyped lambda calculus. And so it tells you types back, and in doing so, it introduces some type variables, and those type variables then get constrained with these subtyping constraints that would say things like, you know, variable X, you know, type X, where X is some type variable, type X is a subtype of like Y arrow Z, let's say. That's the kind of subtyping constraint you might give back to you. So these constraints are built over types that have arrow types and type variables, and that's it. There's several things I like to comment about at a high level of this description of the algorithm. First of all, it might seem miraculous. You can just drop any term in and it types it. How is that possible? I thought types were supposed to rule out some things. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's a sort of a weird conundrum. So in this setting, the types aren't ruling out anything, really. Usually when you have types, like say you have simple types, that's just these arrow types over some type variables, let's say, or base types. If you have pure untyped lambda terms that can be typed with simple types, then they're guaranteed to terminate. Now, any reductions, any computation that happens for that term, any computation that term performs is guaranteed to terminate. Okay? But that's not the case here with these subtyping constraints. And it's sort of as a personal side, this week I'm actually in the middle of moving my family to Maryland. So I'm actually driving some rental cars somewhere right now, and it's a great time. So I'm commuting in a very generous sense. I'm not really commuting right now, but I am driving, which is pretty much my free time for recording podcasts. So I'm sort of transitioning my, you know, professionally I'm still going to work at Iowa this fall and stuff, and maybe this spring, but it might be time to consider a name change. It might become the Type Theory Commute, so the Iowa Type Theory Commute. Anyway, so that's just a little personal aside. So anyway, back to this type inference paper. So one thing that's it's surprising that you can just type every term, but it's not that surprising when you understand one little thing, which is that some listeners may know and some might not, that if you have completely unrestricted recursive types, okay, so you can just say, and you could represent a recursive type with an equation. You could say, and that the key equation here to make for this discussion is, you could say x equals x arrow x, okay? So we're going to say this equation is an equation between a type variable x and a function type, x arrow x. And with that equation, if that equation is true, or if you assume it's true, you can type any lambda term. And the reason is that basically if you need something to behave, like sort of think, imagine everything has type x. If you found that you're calling something as a function and you start out with something that has type x, like, oh, no problem, we know x equals x or x, so let's just turn it into magically turn it into a function and call it. Cool. And if you had something that was of type x arrow x or something, and you need to change it to be an input to an x arrow x function, well, no problem. X arrow x equals x. So you can pass back and forth from a type x to this function space over it, x arrow x. And, you know, I want to come back to that point and say a little more about that. But in fact, this episode is probably pretty much just going to be talking about some of this sort of background to this sort of thing. We'll come and revisit it in a moment. Why, you know, some more about why x equals x or x is such a powerful and strange equation. But with the subtyping constraints, you see, subtyping constraints can let you simulate equations. So if I say x is a subtype of y and y is a subtype of x, maybe not under every semantics, but under a sort of natural standard semantics for types and for subtyping. Like a natural semantics for types is that types are sets of some kinds of values, like the meaning of the type int might be the set of all integers, okay? And then subtyping is just subset of these meanings. So if you say, if you had int subtype of real, semantically you'd be saying the set of all the integers is a subset of the set of all the reals, which of course, you know, would be true, modulo, fancy, you know, fiddling around with representations of things or something like that. So once we see that subtyping constraints can simulate equations, now we know that having unrestricted subtyping constraints is actually very powerful, right? Because I can say, to type every lambda term, I just need to know that x equals x arrow x. Well, guess what? With subtyping constraints, I can just say x is a subtype of x arrow x, and x arrow x is a subtype of x. And lo and behold, I've simulated this sort of dangerous equation. And that's sort of the key argument for why you can, or that's sort of the key insight about why you can type every lambda term, why this algorithm G that Mitchell calls it can succeed in computing a type, a typing context, and a set of constraints for any lambda term. Now back to this question of this equation, x equals x or x. If you think about everything about typing and stuff, that doesn't sound that weird. But if think about mathematical function spaces, think about, like, is the type of natural numbers isomorphic to the type of natural number zero, natural, you know, nat to functions between nats, from nats to nats? No. We know that, right? We've, like, Cantor's theorem and stuff like that to tell us that function spaces are, you know, have greater cardinality than the spaces they're over, except perhaps some degeneracies or something. And so assuming x equals x or x is sort of like assuming that nat equals nat arrow nat. Sounds insane. Like that kind of shouldn't be possible, right? And the craziest thing of it all, so first of all, that kind of gives you some hint that we're absolutely playing with fire. Like if you assume things that are definitely false, then, you know, you can do a lot of crazy stuff. But even more crazy than that is that actually there are types that are equal to their function spaces over them. There are sets, sorry, not types, sets. There are sets of values, D, where D is equivalent, isomorphic to D arrow D. And this discovery of this, of such sets, was due to the great Dana Scott, and mind-bogglingly not the contribution for which he was awarded the Turing Award. I still can't get over that. So he was given the Turing Award for basically developing the idea of non-determinism with Michael Rabin for, like, non-deterministic finite automata. Lovely, lovely. Beautiful idea and all. But absolutely tiny in difficulty and insight and depth compared to constructing this domain D, where D equals D arrow D. And the construction is super cool. I might have a digressive episode just to talk about this because I have studied it a little bit. And it's, it's pretty neat. So... anyhow, so I guess you could ask the question, back to wrapping up, talking about the start of Mitchell. I'd like to say more about Mitchell in a second episode here. But, so why are we going to compute? This is a strange way. Normally you give, it's not very common. You know, we don't write a functional program. You don't write an untyped program and then ask some tool to compute for you, you know, all the, the assumptions would have to be true about the type variables and stuff like that. It seems weird. So what do you get out of this? Well, one thing you get out of this is you do get minimal types. So you get, so Mitchell proves that if his algorithm gives you a typing, like it tells you the type the term has, a type assignment for the variables, and some subtyping constraints, then any other typing that you might be able to derive for that term is an instance of that one that he came up with. So he has... he's computed a minimal typing for you. That's pretty neat. And another thing you kind of would ask is why, what do we get out of these types? Well, we do get type preservation. So there's a type preservation theorem that's proved. So even though the types aren't actually ruling out any errors, right, because they accept all programs. So if you have a typing discipline that accepts all programs, types are supposed to tell you these types, these programs good, these programs not good. So in this case, it's not doing that. It's really a bit odd. But it is doing something for you, which is, it's basically defining some abstractions which will be preserved by reduction. So that does actually make pretty good sense. All right. Thanks as always for listening. Oh, and there's a teaser. I'll try to manage to put a link to this paper or to some rogue copy of the paper on my website or something. And here is a little Easter egg for you. There is a bug, ha ha ha, on page 266, proof of theorem 14. And if you can find the bug, then you get major bragging rights over on the Telegram group for this podcast. And I'll link that in the show notes too. The bug is, it's not like some super hard thing. It's not like a typo. It's like an actual mathematical mistake. Very small, very easily corrected. Hey, you know, it happens to all of us. Great to see that somebody as brilliant as John Mitchell might make a typo. Of course, if I'm wrong, then, well, even more glory. But I'm like pretty much 100% sure there's a mathematical error on page 266, proof of theorem 14. So if you're like a doctoral student, postdoc, you know, there you go. If you're not, you can still get in there and try to do it. The paper is actually somewhere at the start of the paper. He says, this is funny. He says, the paper is largely self-contained and will handsomely repay careful reading. Dude. Styling. Anyway, thanks for listening. Talk to you again sometime soon.